Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Cook it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And at the moment, coming up, starting on the 16th and going to the 23rd of October, is the Environmental Film Festival. And we've got the film festival director, Simon Troon, on the line. G'day, Simon. How are you?
Hi, Annie. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm anxiously anticipating our festival.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It starts next week and it's very exciting. It starts on Thursday and it's going to have its opening night at the Kino at 6:30, which is very interesting because it's one of the venues that you're using this year. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about what you're doing and how you're going about it? Because it's a very nicely curated festival this year.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, gosh, we most of the festival is at Kino in the city, and that's we're very glad to do that. It's a kind of return to where our organisation began 15 years ago as Environmental Film Festival Melbourne. So this is a sort of 15th anniversary event as well, though who we are and what we do has sort of changed a lot in that time. But that's not the entirety of our festival. We're traversing the city almost. So we'll be at Palace Kino next Thursday night for opening night and next Saturday for a whole day of screenings. But next Friday on the 17th of October, we're very glad to be at Trocadero Projects, an art space in Footscray, for a screening. And we love Trocadero and are very glad to be going there.
You've gone over the river.
And river is, yeah, that screening is, we're screening a film called Metabolism by Eugenia Lim that is kind of about the ecologies of Melbourne's West, shot along the Werribee River and around the Werribee treatment plant. So we're really glad to be sort of screening it in situ. And then as well, the following Thursday, we've got a couple of events at Wildflower Video Bar in North Fitzroy, where, again, we're very glad to be there. We've been holding sort of semi-regular screenings at Wildflower over winter, so it's great to be able to include something there as part of this festival.
Yeah, and it's really great because what you're doing is introducing people to new venues and new ways of seeing film, and it's almost as exciting to see the films as the places that they're being shown in.
Yeah, that's right. And I should have said as well, on Sunday the 19th, we've got an event. We're stepping out of the cinema. So we're at Elwood Beach. Following our day of screenings on Saturday, on Sunday we'll be at Elwood Beach for a beach clean.
Yeah, at 11 o'clock. Yeah. I wasn't right. Hurrying you along with all these events because I was going, I was just really taken by the way you've spread out to different locations, which is great. It's very inclusive because of it, and it's quite tantalising in an experiential way because what you've decided to call the Environmental Film Festival this year is exploring ideas of urban living, nature and beyond, and that the idea is that environment is everywhere. This is very important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So the idea of environment is everywhere came came about through kind of conversations, our programming group and our committee members, but also through the way we work and the way that we organise screenings, which is, and there's a big context for this, I suppose, coming out of kind of the lockdown years and organising a big monolithic, you know, one place for 2 weeks festival is very hard for a volunteer organisation, and we're very invested in communities. Like I've mentioned, Trocadero, who we held a screening out there earlier this year and have kind of got a really good relationship with them. So it's sort of about leaning into our communities and leaning into the sense of place where we live and where we work and where most of us. Environmental Films Australia organises screenings across Australia, and some of our programmers are based outside of Melbourne, but we're based here, and so it's about the places and the ways that we're encountering environment in situ. And Australia is such a, you know, Melburnians will know, it takes a long time to get out of the city and get to somewhere that feels capital E environmental. But part of what we want to get people thinking about is that, you know, environment is not just out there over there, spectacular landscapes. It's, you know, part of how we live and move in cities like Melbourne, how we exist in space, how we dwell in different places. So being able to traverse the city, I suppose, helps us to think about that in a little bit of a meta way in how we're shaping our festival too.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's one of the reasons why this is quite a sophisticated affair, it seems to me. And there's a couple of program items that you've got that I think are incredibly interesting. The opening night film, for example, Self-Portrait of a Nation on the Brink. What a fantastic sort of film. Insights into a long-forgotten 1970s epic photo survey of the American environment. Because what we're seeing here is the concept of time and change. What a fantastic film to open your festival with.
Yeah, we're so excited to be able to screen it in Australia in 2025. It's a Documerica, Self-Portrait of a Nation on the Brink, feature documentary that sort of details the Documerica project, which was a really big undertaking in the 1970s, a photo survey of the American environment at a moment of, I suppose, precarious transformation, you know, pollution taking hold and industry expanding. And so this was a nationwide project in America to capture this transformation, enlisting so many photographers. I think between kind of 80 and 100, over 100 photographers, that the film tries to kind of account for all of this work, photographers working in different places to capture, you know, changing cityscapes, small towns, rural areas, how they're affected by industry, pollution. So the film itself uses a lot of photographs from this survey. You know, images of not kind of spectacular, beautiful nature imagery in isolation, but, you know, photos of, you know, pollution next to a pristine-looking mountain. So really complicating images that we have of the environment. And I think it's such a timely thing for us in Australia in the 2020s as well, to look back on what was then posed as, you know, a moment of being on the brink. We're several decades on, so does that mean we're beyond the brink now, or are we at a different moment of transformation?
Well, then
the film does open up to kind of contemporary.
Well, you know, America is a place where they've removed mountains for the coal underneath, you know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah,
I mean, it's right. Just, and I remember when I was young being told that there was a lake on fire. It just lived in my imagination. The concept of this environmental degradation is just extraordinary. So if it's in photos and over time, it's important for people to realise that the alarm bells were being struck in the 1970s. People, it's not news, you know.
It's not new at all. And the fact is we have kind of large-scale extractive industry operations happening in Australia now as well, and have done for a long time. And I think part of the way we do tend to think of the environment as being far away, we tend to think of things like that as not really being so interrelated with our daily lives here either. So the film kind of complicates things like that.
Yeah. Well, another one, which is also from another place, which I just think is fabulously interesting. It's going to be on at the Wildflower Bar on Thursday the 23rd, an eye-opening manifesto documentary by two Amazonian filmmakers who flipped the script, revealing how European colonisers invented false ideas about the Amazon and its people. From the stolen artefacts hidden away in museums to the logging trucks stripping the forests, colonial legacies continue to shape the present. Just so important at the moment.
Yes, and that's a fascinating film. It's one of the more sort of artful films that we've got in the festival. It's a little trickier to explain. It's an essay film, and it kind of, maybe it's a travelogue as well.
It's made by people who tell stories differently.
Yes, exactly. And South American filmmaking, I can attest, is really, really interesting, particularly when we think of environmental filmmaking and films that can account for different, you know, ways of understanding the environment, quote-unquote, that we might not be so accustomed to. But this film kind of uses the Amazon, not uses, but the Amazon as a backdrop for a whole lot of environmental debates around greenwashing and kind of how colonial narratives shape certain parts of the world as places of abundance and places of kind of beauty and those framings.
So absolutes. Really, isn't it? Advertising absolutes.
Exactly. So the filmmakers kind of fight back against this, and to do that they travel to Europe and they go to museums and they investigate sort of the historical framing of their land and their people, and they try to stage a reframing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What a concept. I just love it. The other one is Australia, of course, has produced some fantastic films in this space as well. You've got The Sacred Hills and you've got The World According to My Dad. These are two films that will be completely interesting to Australian film audiences as well, because they contextualise the environmental struggle and importance here.
Yeah, that's right. These Sacred Hills and our screening of These Sacred Hills. These Sacred Hills is a documentary from North America. It's from the US, and it's about, it follows members of the Rock Creek Band of the Yakama Nation who are kind of, they're fighting to protect sacred sites from, get this, a green energy project that has kind of progressed, and it's a live issue, so it's progressing without consultation, and their land is being kind of effectively stolen for a large-scale green energy project. So they're not against green energy, but they're against the way that their land is being
which has echoes of the wind farm on the island off Tasmania right at this moment.
That's right. And we're screening that feature with two short films made by Original Power, which is a group, an Indigenous-led group in Australia, working in the Northern Territory to, they do a lot, but part of what they do is work to install small-scale solar energy for Indigenous communities.
Yep.
To kind of change relationships around kind of access to power and sovereignty and connection to country. So it's complex framing of the issues, but we're always doing our best to kind of, when we have films from elsewhere, put them in conversation with not just Australian environmental issues, but Australian environmental filmmaking.
Yeah. There's also fun going to happen, absolute fun. I mean, it's stimulating. These films are incredibly stimulating. The places that you're having them are very interesting, but you're also going to have a big party because it is a 15-year anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And we do like fun. We're not only into kind of beating audiences around.
Yeah, maudlin self-reflection.
We do this all with a spirit of sort of joy and trying to think about things with joy and the fact that we're doing it, you know, together and in communities. But yes, 15 years is... And I haven't been involved with environmental...
Well, it's going to be at the pub.
...for all those 15 years, but... We'll be at the pub and we'll be connecting with kind of people previously involved. We'll be celebrating. 15 years is a long time for a volunteer arts organisation. We've seen a lot of change, but we're really happy to be kind of celebrating, and we'll be thinking about previous festivals and previous events, many of which, you know, I attended as a punter. So it'll be nice to sort of look back and celebrate and have some plant-based canapes and some drinks and move forward with, you know, carrying the past and all the work that we've done as an organisation. So, yeah, 15 years. It's
great.
It's a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for talking to us. And I'll run our CSA, which will give everybody the details that they need to get on board with the Environmental Film Festival that starts on the 16th and goes to the 23rd. Thanks for talking to us today, Simon.
Thanks so much, Annie.
The Environmental Film Festival is back, running from the 16th. To the 23rd of October across Melbourne, Footscray, Fitzroy and Elwood. Enjoy Australia's premier environmental cinema showcase with 23 films, 14 premieres, 4 talks and 2 community gatherings, all exploring ideas of urban living, nature and beyond. Plus celebrate the team's 15th year with a very special anniversary party. In this time of climate crises, reconsider the world around you and experience how environment is everywhere with the Environmental Film Festival 2025. Tickets on sale now at environmentalfilms.org.au.
Presented by Environmental Films Australia, a 3CR supporter.
And you're with Annie on Showreel. And we're going to go on to a conversation I had with writer-director Kieran Roach-Turner about his new film Beast of War, which starts at cinemas tonight. He's known for Wormwood, Road of the Dead, Wormwood Chronicles of the Dead and Sting. But this one is a little bit different. It still has the unnerving elements of a white pointer and men stranded on a raft in the Timor Sea, but it's so much more, and I recommend it. Buy a ticket, go and see it. I really liked Beast of War. It's a really economically made film, and I was wondering how you decided to make a quintessentially Australian film, effectively.
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that, Annie. Yeah, it's funny. My wife hates horror. It's funny to be married to somebody who hates horror and be a horror filmmaker, but she watched it and turned to me and said, I love it. It's your best yet. And so I don't know what I've done, but I seem to have made a semi-violent shark film that even my wife, who loves Downton Abbey, can watch. So that's nice. The last film I made was a film called Sting, which, you know, sort of had American accents. I made a very American film in Australia, and this time I just wanted to tell an Australian story. You know, I'm sort of known for that a little bit. My first few films were pretty quintessentially Australian, and I wanted to go back to that. But yeah, when I read about the true story of the Armidale, an Australian warship that went down in 1942, I just couldn't believe the story, the bravery that these guys went through, and I knew I couldn't base my idea on that. I very loosely was inspired by, because to tell that story would have been disrespectful. To tell it in the way that I was intending to tell it, which was to turn it into a semi quite serious adventure piece, but I really wanted to be able to underline the adventure, as was, you know, Spielberg's intent with the original Jaws. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a quintessentially Australian story that is true. And so I guess that's just how it came out.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a whole lot of films from, say, the 40s and 50s and even cruising to the 60s plays in the minds of war dramas, effectively. And yes, all of the characters are male. And in a way, what you've done is actually do the same thing, but it's a much more modern take, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and also just the way it was made too. I mean, it's very hyper-stylized, you know, the latest in lighting and cinematographic technology. And we had these giant volume screens that we'd wheel in front of this huge tank of water. And so we had, you know, we were filming it through a modern lens, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to approach it aesthetically like those old 50s war movies. And I wanted every now and again, you know, to get that same feeling of watching, you know, one of those old 60s war movies, like, you know, The Dirty Dozen or Wild Geese or whatever. But more importantly, Bridge Over the River Kwai, David Lean, big influence on me and just on the tone. I wanted it to feel fun. And it is a boy's own adventure. You know, there weren't any female soldiers trapped on that raft. And I just wanted to sort of stay true to that. And, you know, we've got a couple of nurses in there. I wanted to make sure those scenes were, you know, were good so that we could semi show the, you know, the fact that a lot of Australian women served in like really important capacities. But yeah, it's a boys' movie, you know, and I really sort of leant into that aesthetically, I think.
But you do something else, though. I mean, one of the things I was really, because I'm with your wife, I watch a lot of films, and I've watched a lot of horror, and a lot of horror isn't actually horror these days, it seems to me. They're not horrible enough, if you know what I mean, unnerving enough.
Right.
However, this is unnerving. The point I'm making is that I was watching the film and I thought, oh my goodness, the way it's been crafted is so interesting because it's so quick. You're a deft filmmaker. That's my point.
A fast game's a good game, Annie. I hate that there's horror films out there that are like 3 hours and 40 minutes long. It's like, come on. If your movie is literally hurting my spinal column, you might need an editor, you know? My film's under 90 minutes. It's like 87 minutes, and it doesn't need to be any more than that.
And it's beautiful. But you do a couple of things, like the thing about the Timor Sea and the space that Second World War drama has in the psyche of the Australian consciousness. Mm. But you also do that with a whole range of other things, like you did with references to the Second World War films coming out of England and America. But you also even go back to that fantastic painting of the people on the boat, you know, the French painting with the people dying. I can't remember what it's called.
I wish I could remember too, but yeah.
You know what
I
mean, I'm talking about, don't you? Where they actually die.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a biblical kind of thing where people are sort of out there trapped on this floating piece of wood. And
yeah.
And from that painting, you get the idea that they're being tested by God. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's like, I really wanted to get that sort of across in this film so that, you know, we start off almost in realism in the jungles of Darwin where they're being trained. And then when they're put on this warship and like sent out into the ocean, you know, they're traveling through a fog bank and they get sunk by Japanese Zeros. And, you know, they sort of have to swim up out of the bowels of this sinking ship into a horrifically sort of fire lit hellscape. And I wanted to seal them in that fog bank in the same way that those people were sealed in that painting within that frame. And so, you know, the fog bank never lifts, but, you know, we change colours. We go from fiery blacks to deep blues to gorgeous blood red sunrises and sunsets.
Oh, fantastic.
And then the lights up with bioluminescence under the water. So you've got these weird sort of steampunk science fiction neon greens. And I wanted it to feel like these men were being tested by a dark god. And, you know, the shark represents, you know, everything bad that they're going to have to go through in war. And they have to sort of defeat, you know, the monster shark inside themselves before they can get through to the end. And, you know, that's all, I mean, it sounds quite pretentious, but you've got to kind of talk about that stuff when you're making a film like this, and also make sure that the shark's fun and there's lots of explosions and fights and, you know, you're taking care of the adventure. But, you know, yeah, we were working on a few levels here.
Tell me about the actors and also the writing, because to me they seem to be intrinsic to each other. Like the Mark Cole Smith character, he's incredibly brave. You create this incredibly brave person, and it brings in a whole lot of the issues, modern issues, and they were present then, but we're now actually owning up to them, of deep racism.
Well, yeah, I wrote this for Mark and just crossed my fingers and hoped that he said yes. I wanted to work with him for years. I think he's one of our great actors.
Me too.
He's got a star quality that is not unlike somebody like Robert Mitchum, where, you know, you just can't take your eyes off him. And, you know, he's just this big, incredibly, he's just got an integrity. And he can do all his own stunts, and he's like stupidly good looking, and he can write. You know, he really helped me write this. He and Wayne Blair came on as sort of Indigenous consultants and helped me through, you know, all the cultural aspects of this. And Mark added a lot of lines that that I didn't think up myself. He's got this great line where he says, you know, it's okay to be afraid. Fear can keep you alive, but it can also get you killed. And he wrote that. And I'm like, where'd you get that? He's like, I don't know. But, yeah, we put it in the script. And, I mean, his performance, we hang the film on his performance. And the idea that, you know, these Indigenous soldiers were paid like a third of what
I know, that was shocking.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Like, not half, a third.
Third. Yeah, they were so precise.
And it's not like they're giving a third of their lives. Like,
no.
So, yeah, I just wanted to highlight that a bit. And, you know, I wanted this character to have a deep integrity and a heroism. He's the leader, you know. He starts off and there's a lot of inherent racism, you know, in that unit. And then as soon as they pop up on the raft, it's like, oh, no, he's the natural leader. Like, skin colour disappears immediately once you're faced with life and death and you realise that, you know, a person of colour is the person who's probably going to get you out of here alive. And all of his flaws are internal. Mark's actual grandfather... or great-grandfather was a pearl diver over in Broome.
Oh, yeah.
And so his family's always had a very deep connection to the ocean. And so his character's younger brother pearl dives maybe before he's ready and gets taken by a shark. And so Mark's character's carrying a lot of guilt about that, and he thinks, well, maybe if I can just help this other young bloke survive, you know, this shark, maybe I can get rid of some of the guilt of my own brother dying.
And we have to leave the conversation there because we're coming up to the next program, which is published or not. But you want to hear the rest of that, you can go to the podcast for Showreel. Fascinating conversation. And don't forget, go and buy a ticket. Go and see the film. It's actually really good. Beast of War. You will enjoy it. We're going to go out with A Change Is Going to Come, Kutcher Edwards.
I was born by the river in a little tent, just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast, produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast, produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.